Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
My new book, Diary of a Psychosis, is out. It's the most lively, devastating baseball bat to the throat takedown of what the public health establishment did in 2020 and beyond that you can imagine. It's my first book in 9 years, and you're going to love it. Check it out at diaryofcovid.com. And if you've already bought it, make sure also to visit diaryofcovid.com so you can claim your free bonuses, including my free companion volume, Collateral Damage, a collection of stories from real people who suffered under the restrictions. They weren't allowed to tell their stories at the time, but every one of them told me, "We just want to be heard." Check it all out at diaryofcovid.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Tom Woods Show. This is episode 2462 with Paul Gottfried, who is, are you executive editor of Chronicles or just editor? I'm sorry.
I'm editor-in-chief. My associate, Edward Welsh, is the executive editor. He actually runs the magazine on a daily basis.
Okay. It's a great magazine. It's way better than basically any magazine you're thinking of subscribing to. And it is the magazine that published my very first published article a very long time ago. So I strongly recommend you get it because, you know, I'm sure you can get an electronic copy, but doggone it, aren't we looking at enough godforsaken screens all day long? Wouldn't you like the old-fashioned pleasure of a physical magazine as you're sitting in your armchair with your pipe or however you consume these things? So chroniclesmagazine.org is where you want to go. And not right now, we're talking right now, but after we're done, why don't you go to chroniclesmagazine.org? Paul has credentials as long as my arm. He's got a Yale PhD, although I'm telling you, Paul, these Ivy League PhDs that you and I have are more a source of embarrassment with each passing day.
Yes, I agree.
It's like, I don't even want to talk about them anymore. I got everything out of them that I'm ever going to get. So anyway, it's been a long time, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on a whole bunch of things. So I guess I didn't really talk to you during the real heat of the presidential primary. I mean, I guess there wasn't that much heat because we all knew that Trump was going to emerge as the winner, but there was some heat introduced by the presence of Nikki Haley and by the kind of unexpected entrance of Vivek Ramaswamy. And I'm curious to know, having observed him for the past few months, what are your opinions about Vivek?
I think he is an extremely articulate young man. His verbal facility is overwhelming. Really, listen to him. And unlike Donald Trump, he actually speaks in whole sentences. He's coherent. He is what Trump might be if Trump were of Indian descent and were better educated. I can't say if Trump had more control, because with Vivek, I think he's carried away by his emotions most of the time. And I find him a very impressive young man. And, you know, if he were the Republican nominee, I would vote for him. But of course, he's not going to be the Republican nominee. And I think he wisely ended up supporting Trump. I don't think it could hurt him. And I think he represents similar popular style, but in my view, is able to do it in a much more intelligent way than Donald Trump.
Well, for example, you probably recall shortly after he conceded and dropped out of the race, he apparently was talking to Trump about the danger of central bank digital currencies. The next day, Trump comes out and says, there will never under me be a central bank digital currency. And he appears surprised at the loudness of the cheers. It's like he hadn't realized his base was so interested in this. And he says, wow, you guys are all smart people. So we all know what that means. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what this was yesterday. You know, but today I'm telling you where I stand, and I'm glad you're all with me. And I thought, this is both good and bad, isn't it?
Yeah, he's usually influenced. He has a certain image, a certain macho image. Is the people who like him don't mind the fact that he sullies the reputation of his enemies, that he speaks in a very vulgar fashion. They probably welcome this. Unfortunately, he is not as well informed about political issues as one might hope. And I remember that, by the way, with Vivek, when he mentioned the digital currency, as you know, something, a subject that interests me. And no, he did come out the next day and said, you know, I'm against this. And so, of course, DeSantis is against this. Most of the other Republicans took positions against the digital currency.
Yeah, but it does seem, and some of that is that Trump sat out the debates. So, but I mean, he probably should know things like that. But yeah, I see, I was impressed by Vivek too. And it was also the strategy. His strategy was kind of interesting. He's starting off at zero name recognition, which is, I mean, basically an insurmountable obstacle. Zero name recognition. And having a name like Vivek Ramaswamy that doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, somehow he's got to make himself well-known and liked.
Uh-huh.
So I think in light of the hurdle he was facing, I think he did a job that he has no reason to be ashamed of. But also, in terms of his strategy, he did something that I think DeSantis would have been smart to do. But I think my instinct tells me he had very old-fashioned campaign advisors. Vivek went out of his way to be on my show multiple times, Dave Smith's show, a whole bunch of these libertarian-type shows, which were just low-hanging fruit. I mean, they weren't low-hanging fruit in that a lot of my listeners and other people listeners, they're just never going to vote for a Republican ever. But some would consider it. And nobody else even made an attempt to contact us. But he did. He figured, I know that there are people no one else is even going to be reaching out to. Or he went to Porkfest in New Hampshire, and he spoke to the libertarians up there, as did RFK Jr., which was also a bold move for RFK Jr. And when the Democratic Party of New Hampshire warned RFK Jr., you better not talk to these people, he wrote a blistering reply about how you are not going to tell me which people I can talk to. So I like people who are going to be mavericks in that way and run things a little bit differently from how we expect. So by the end, even though Vivek probably has some things that I'm not happy with and his foreign policy isn't exactly the way I would want it, I feel like his presence in the conversation is without a doubt a net positive. So I felt like I had a rooting interest in him by the time all was said and done.
Yeah, well, one of the things I found interesting about him is though he's a Hindu, he stressed Christian values. And this was exactly the opposite of the move made by Nikki Haley, who was an evangelical, who then went back to emphasizing her Sikh roots. She had a Sikh temple with a husband and so forth. And I think Vivek understood that you might get some people on the left who like religious exotica, but most of the people you're going to be appealing to are self-identified Christians. And he understood that. And he was always defending Christians. He said it is, you know, he's a Hinduism is really similar to Christianity and so forth. I think that was a very clever move. I think he understood where his base was.
Yes. And also when he knew he was going to be asked about that. Mm-hmm. And he knew there's no running away from it. So you better just come up with a straightforward reply.
Right.
Rather than be perceived as being a politician trying to wave it off.
Unfortunately, he did not win the nomination, but we didn't expect him to.
No, we didn't expect him to. I thought there was a chance he could surprise people because of the sheer effort he put into Iowa, driving through those blizzards, having more events than everybody else put together. I thought there was some chance. The problem, of course, that he faced was that there was a Donald Trump in the race. And so I like what Vivek Singh, but I already have Trump. So why do I need you? Very hard to overcome that.
Yeah, I was actually struck by how well Nikki Haley has done, considering she seems to be deaf. Republican voter. She does all the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But she has a lot of money behind her. There's media support, at least, you know, media support that will continue until she gets rid of Trump. And there was also some unfortunate interviews that I heard after the New Hampshire primary in which Democrats who crossed the party lines to support Nikki then admitted they would vote for Biden in the general race.
Yeah. So that's part of the explanation. That's part of why she's doing well.
Yeah. She's getting a lot of Democratic support. But she, you know, she's done well at holding on to that base, but she's not doing very well in picking up Republican voters.
Yeah. And you never in your life, you never run into a Nikki Haley supporter. In fact, she on Twitter, she shared a couple of what it was laughable. They were supposed to be screenshots of emails that supporters had written to her. And they were so fake, both in the way they looked and in the things they said. No one would say these things about Nikki Haley.
Right, right. You wonder whether these polls are actually reflecting her popularity. I really don't believe she's 8 points ahead of Biden, which is 10 points ahead. Would you have a lot of Democrats saying they'd vote for Nikki Haley? And many of them may not turn out to vote for her if she's a Republican nominee. So I think it's hyped up, inflated support that she has right now. And this may be even true of the polls that show her running away with the race.
Well, by the time this airs, the thing will probably be more or less moot anyway.
Right.
But I did like the way I thought Vivek handled her really well.
Or I do too.
And he got her flustered. And that whole thing about asking her to name Ukrainian provinces, I liked his point there, which is that I think Americans have been kind of spellbound by this idea that the foreign policy elite has insights that they don't have, and they understand why we need to intervene in X, Y, and Z place. And so if you expose them as being the dum-dums that most of them are, that helps.
I agree that there's a kind of rhetorical support for the Ukrainian cause, but these people seem to know very little about what's going on in Ukraine, unless it comes from neoconservative approved sources.
Right.
I mean, you pick up the New York Post every day, and these people reporting from Ukraine are in the pocket of the Ukrainian government or in the pocket of the neocons. And it's just, we have to do this, and there's only 5 more minutes in which we can show Ukraine, if we wait to, to send them $100 billion tomorrow, they're going to fall to Russia rule. I have to say that Marco Rubio surprised me by saying that this will have to be settled. They have to make some kind of peace, and nobody's going to get, neither side will get what it wants fully, because that's the only way it can end. I mean, otherwise the war will go on and on forever. And I do think it's outrageous that the people who are hysterically concerned with Ukraine's eastern border don't give a damn about borders in the United States. In fact, they're delighted to have all the illegals coming because they're going to vote for the Democratic Party.
Yeah. In fact, it reminds me of the speech. He used to write for Chronicles. Maybe he still does. Bill Kaufman, you know him?
Oh, yeah, he used to write for us.
Yeah. So Bill gave a speech at Ron Paul's Rally for the Republic in 2008. And he was saying that basically there are two Americas, but they're not Democrats and Republicans. They're people who, I'm paraphrasing a bit, but he was saying that you can't care about Baghdad and your own backyard. You really at some level have to choose. And McCain, who was the nominee in 2008, he said, chooses Baghdad. And then Bill goes into this flowery thing. Well, we stand in our backyards, on our front porches, in sandlot baseball diamonds and volunteer fire departments and rock and roll clubs and, all that stuff about the little institutions of the real America. And when you say that these people care nothing about borders of the U.S., but they care about Ukraine, that's exactly what Bill was talking about.
Yeah.
They have no connection to the real America.
Yeah. You hear from some of the Republican warmongers that we're actually concerned about both. Well, they're not, the point is that you may have to choose in the end, because the other side was not interested. The Democrats are not interested in both. They want open borders to get more Democratic voters, and they want to get hundreds of billions of dollars to this lost cause in Ukraine. So at the end of the day, you may have to choose between the two.
Yeah, yes, indeed. My dear Tom Woods Show listener, you know that in our day and age, we are faced with information overload, but don't you worry, old Woods here has an excellent way to deal with it. With the Blinkist app, you can absorb huge amounts of information in 27 nonfiction categories. So we're talking history, philosophy, parenting, career, technology, religion, and on and on. Blinkist condenses each book into 15-minute summaries you can read or listen to. So if you have a half-hour commute each way, you can absorb the equivalent of 4 books. You think that might make you a more impressive person? Among the thousands and thousands of titles at Blinkist, you'll find libertarian classics, Rothbard, Friedman, dare I say, even Woods, your very own host here. Well, right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Woods to start your 7-day free trial and get 40% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/Woods to get 40% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/Woods. And now for a limited time, you can even use Blinkist Connect to share your premium account. You'll get 2 premium subscriptions for the price of 1. Well, let me ask you about an article you have on The Blaze. And I'm not asking you about this article exclusively because it's behind a paywall and I'm too much of a cheapskate to pay to read it. But that is a little bit of the reason. But in this article, you're talking about a person whose name has come up here and there amid some of these murmurings about Biden's cognitive abilities and whether he's fit for the office and some concerns that Democrats have. And of course, the name is Michelle Obama. And I've heard a lot of Republicans say that she would be a formidable opponent for, and we can think of a number of reasons that would be the case. But what's your opinion?
Well, I had a piece this morning saying that she would not be as formidable an opponent as some of the Democrats and Republicans might believe at this time. She is so offensive. As I say, she is a younger black version of Hillary Clinton, and that may be paying her too much of a compliment. What I'd argue is that, you know, the fact that she's the most respected woman in the world in 2020, according to the Gallup poll, means absolutely nothing, since you only get 10% of people responding to this poll. I was not asked, no, I suspect you weren't asked to respond to it, but only 10% supported her, 6% supported Kamala Harris, 4% supported Melania Trump. Then, of course, there's the other 90% all over the place. Most of the interviews with her are done by people who just lob softballs or these paper balls, whatever we call them, at her. They do not ask serious questions. So she has Oprah Winfrey and Joy Reid and these other black female feminists. They're inviting her on and convincing her she's a wonderful person. But I remember a piece of news that got away, and the media didn't try to suppress it in the end. It was just something that anybody who saw it would be turned off to Michelle. She was saying that people in Washington are racist and sexist because when she walks her dog, even if they pet her dog, they do not address her. They don't speak to her. And she went on, I think she wrote a similar piece about being in Martha's Vineyard, which is an immaculately leftist island.
Yeah.
But she obviously feels entitled. She's arrogant, stupid. I see no evidence of intelligence in that woman. And although her husband plays the race card and tells us we're systemic white racist, he does have a certain charm, Barack. She has none. She will start with sort of a hardcore Democratic base if she were the nominee. I don't see her winning, even against Trump.
Well, so let's say a little something about Trump. And I know, like, we're going to be tired. I'm already tired of this now. And we have a whole, you know, X months to go here. But I feel like you and I have talked about this since 2016, because I was wondering then, do you think after Trump, let's say, serves a term, that the Republican Party will just go back to being Mitt Romney? And I think you and I were more pessimistic than we should have been about that.
Well, I think you're right. I think that force is much more powerful than was often given credit for being. New York Post, Wall Street Journal, the Murdoch media empire is controlled by neoconservatives and by rhinos. So is National Review, obviously. They do have a lot of real estate. You know, the regular Republicans, big business Republicans, the liberal internationalist interventionists and so forth. And I think there's a good chance that Trump will not change the party irreversibly and that, you know, once he's gone, they could well go back to nominating. I don't think Nikki Haley. I mean, I think by now she's pretty much destroyed herself. I mean, it could be a figure like Nikki Haley who gets the nomination once Trump is gone. Another thing that I might mention is that, you know, all these populists are screaming hurrah, hurrah because Mitch McConnell is stepping down. In all likelihood, he'll be replaced by somebody like John Cornyn of Texas, who's a liberal Republican. They're not going to put a right-wing Republican in Mitch McConnell's position. It's highly unlikely that would happen.
We've been hearing a lot about Javier Milei in Argentina and all the things that he's done. Like, from the moment he stepped into office, he's been taking action. He's slashing this and abolishing that and saying that political campaigns have to be funded by voluntary contributions now. Like, whatever. Whatever he's done a lot of it. And people, Vivek included, have said, there's no reason we can't duplicate what he's doing in the U.S. But I don't know, do you feel that way? I feel like he's able to do that in Argentina because people have reached a point where they feel like the people in the bow ties and the fancy suits have had their chance and we have triple-digit inflation. And so we're willing to consider radical alternatives. I don't know how radical alternatives Americans are prepared to accept.
I don't think they're ready for that. I mean, if you noticed, when DeSantis suggested we might want to raise the age for qualifying for Social Security to 70, there was quite a backlash. And Trump assured everybody that all the entitlement programs will remain intact, no changes that will be made and so forth. Much of the populist base of the United States represent that view. They do not want to slash budgets if it affects their entitlement programs. Of course, in Argentina, you're dealing with double-digit inflation, all kinds of problems that have been going on for some time. They've beggared people. We have not yet reached that point in the United States, even with all the disastrous policies pursued by the Biden administration.
A lot of times, at least in my lifetime, it seems like we hear this year's presidential election is the most important in history. The survival of America is at stake. Now, it's hard to make that case when it's Bill Clinton versus Bob Dole, you know. But I will say that there is rather more of a difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump than there was between Clinton and Dole. But how do you evaluate that kind of claim that people make all the time? Do you think this actually is the most important election? If not, what would be another semi-recent one that was as important?
No, I agree. I think this is the last chance to turn back the totalitarian left in this country, or at least restrain them somewhat. I think if Joe Biden wins and more illegals come into the country, they will be quickly enfranchised, or they certainly will count toward the census, congressional census. They'll be given all kinds of benefits. They will be wined and dined by the Democratic Party. There will be efforts made to bring Puerto Rico and Washington in as a 51st and 52nd state. They will try to pack the Supreme Court. All the things that the Democrats were planning to do, they will do. And of course, they'll also nationalize the voting procedures in such a way that it'll be impossible for anybody but leftists to win the presidency in the future. I think it could be very dangerous. It's not that Trump, you know, is our savior. I think Trump is a profoundly flawed figure. In many ways, a thoroughly unprincipled individual. But he is the best we have right now if we're looking for somebody to stop the Democrats.
Wow. I mean, my instinct tells me the same kind of thing. Because what else is the reason for importing all these people? Is it really that their hearts are moved by their plight at home?
I mean, come on. Well, let me throw that. Why will they not deport people who have already been stolen and committed crimes? Because they're future Democratic voters. That's why they won't throw them out. It's very obvious what they're doing. What bothers me about this is even the Republicans, Fox News, it took them like years to come around to the obvious. I think they were thinking they might be able to recruit these people if they stay as future Republican voters. So hope springs eternal for them. But that's obviously the only reason that I can think of why they're giving free medical care and all kinds of other things. They're being cultivated as Democratic voters.
Hey, everybody. I know a lot of you are tired of being under the thumb of big tech, but the question is, what are you going to do about it? Well, how about not using their quote-unquote free tools? Yeah, they offer you these free tools because they're harvesting your data and manipulating you as a consumer. Federated Computer, on the other hand, offers a full replacement for Google, Microsoft Office 365, Slack, Zoom, and more for people who care about privacy and, you know, not being treated like cattle. Everything is encrypted end-to-end, fully backed up daily, so we're talking private email, file storage, team chat, WordPress hosting, CRM, help desk, email marketing tools, and more, all bundled up into one easy monthly subscription. You get unlimited users without your price going up and fantastic customer support from, get this, actual human beings. Their solutions are powered by open source software, so you can take your data wherever you like, whenever you like. So visit federated.computer/woods today for your free 30-day trial. So how about that? A company that thinks its job is to, you know, provide you with services instead of spying on you or shutting you up or manipulating you. So take your first step toward digital freedom. Visit federated.computer/woods today for your free 30-day trial. Well, I don't like to exaggerate. I don't like to go over the top. I mean, let me give you an example. I have a guy who was on the show earlier this week. He's from the UK, Dominic Frisby. And he said, you know, the thing is, if you really want to get a lot of attention, you'll say something in the financial press like, I think gold is going to 10,000, or I think Bitcoin will be at 150,000 within 2 months, and something like that. Whereas somebody who says, well, you know, it'll have a slow but steady rise and it'll probably pull back a little, you know, no one cares about that, you know, so the more sensational you can be, the better. And I try not to be that way, even though it sounds sensationalistic, it also happens to be, I think, probably correct what you've just said. And so let's suppose that the unthinkable happens and Joe Biden gets reelected. Now, you know, you and I are, let's say, if I may say so, Paul, a touch over the hill. But how would you advise, let's say, young people just starting out in their early 20s? What should they do? Should they leave? What should they do?
Well, one of the possible strategies for dealing with the effect is to move into a red state, or a state that's still red. I mean, I don't. By the time they franchise the illegals in Texas, it'll probably be a blue state.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some parts of the country that have not been taken over by the radical left and by the deep state. And I think people should move into those areas. I think one chance to resist, or one possibility of resisting, is to be moving into areas that are solidly conservative and doing whatever one can to resist the directives of the federal government, undermining them, doing whatever. And the strategy obviously pursued by the Confederacy did not work. It was 700,000 people dying in a civil war. And the chances of survival for the right would be probably even worse than they were in the 1860s. But there is a possibility of doing what Abbott is doing in Texas, which is defying the federal government, but doing it in a way that is clearly constitutional. Right? I mean, everybody sees states do have a right to resist an invasion. You know? And he's going to win on this. I'm not sure the Republicans can win this race. According to the polls that I'm looking at, Trump is only 2 points ahead of Biden in the poll. In all the reliable polls I'm seeing, even though Biden is enormously unpopular, his numbers are well below water level, and it's only 38% acceptability, whatever it is. Trump is not doing very well, except among Republicans. The last poll I saw here, Trump was picking up 47% of the vote and Biden 45% of the vote, which means the Democrats are going to cheat and get a more percentage point.
Right. But I mean, this is what everybody was afraid of. He's done nothing. All he's done is alienate people further.
Right.
And the thing is, you can make a 1-minute elevator pitch about the absolute insanity of 2024 America, that in your heart, you know I'm right. You know, if I may borrow a phrase, you know I'm right. That I don't care if you even think of yourself as a Democrat. There are a lot of you Democrats who think this whole gender pronoun thing is crazy. You know, you weren't quite sure about all that COVID stuff either. You don't want to transform your whole life because of quote unquote climate change. Like, you know, something is seriously wrong. And, you know, you don't have to like me. You don't have to like me, but I'm going to try to hold this off for a little while. I mean, at least try. You know, if you can't speak extemporaneously, then memorize it and just keep giving that, or send Vivek all over the country to give the damn speech.
Well, I agree. DeSantis or Vivek, either one would have been fine. I mean, they would have provided the same populist message in whole sentences. They're coherent. They would have addressed the issues that you mentioned. You're not going to get this out of Trump. It's just that, you know, Nikki Haley is a bird brain and I'm the greatest guy and so on. I have no idea how people can stand listening to him. I see this as a right winger and as somebody who favors the populace.
Ray, you are not a quote-unquote never-Trumper in the neocon sense at all.
No, absolutely not. And I do intend to vote for it.
So if you're annoyed, then what does that mean?
Yes.
you're like ultra-right-winger Paul Gottfried, for heaven's sake. So, all right. So we'll see. Tell me what's been cooking at Chronicles lately. What kind of issues you guys are writing about?
Well, I don't know. We have an issue on the end of liberalism. Liberalism meaning 19th century bourgeois liberalism, winter liberalism.
Yeah.
Why it is ending? What will replace it? We have an issue on anti-white racism, which is coming up in May. I know that we also have an issue on NATO. I think we had several articles on NATO this month. That was the March issue. And we're planning other issues with equally provocative themes. And we generally just plan 3 months ahead. So we're almost at the end of the three-month period. We'll have to plan three more.
Three more, yeah. Well, I've been doing, since I added the video element, I've been doing 3 episodes a week. And so it's like the end of every week, it's, oh my gosh, I have to plan 3 more of these things? Does this ever end?
They just there's to go on and on. Yeah, and fortunately, we have enough people with imagination for future issues. The issues are not all that different. We generally have the same people writing for us, you know, our editors and our regular contributors and our book reviewers and so forth. But we do try to vary the theme.
Yeah.
But I find even when we have what Ed calls no theme issues, they look pretty much the same as the thematic issues. Yeah. So we always end up having several articles on the same theme. So at the last moment, we decide it's a thematic issue.
Well, it is very much an intellectual pleasure, let's say, to read Chronicles magazine. And so I'm going to, again, I'm not getting any kickback from Paul Gottfried when I say this. It's just that it not only do I enjoy it, but it holds sentimental value for me because I think back to those years when, in fact, Murray Rothbard recommended that I read Chronicles. So how
yes.
about that?
Yes, Dad. Well, he was a revered figure at Chronicles magazine. back in the 1980s and early 1990s.
Yeah. He was publishing there. So chroniclesmagazine.org is the website. So, well, Paul, it's looking pretty grim, but...
It always looks grim.
I know. That is the lesson, isn't it?
It's really grimmer now than it was last year.
I know.
The year before.
Start thinking about other countries, people. And Paul, I appreciate you so much and your time today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.